This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Did you know that Rabble.ca is holding a donation drive right now? If you like to support independent media and you want us around, you can donate at rabble.ca/membership.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
It's been over 25 years since the Union Carbide pesticide plant in Bhopal, India, released over 40 tons of toxic gases into the air. The gas leak triggered a disaster that is now widely recognized as the world's worst industrial catastrophe. Some government agencies estimate that 15,000 people died within the weeks following the initial gas leak, and to this day, thousands of people continue to suffer from health problems related to the disaster. 2 weeks ago, the first convictions were handed down in connection with the disaster. Seven Indian citizens who formerly worked for Union Carbide in India were found guilty of causing death by negligence. They were sentenced to 2 years in prison and ordered to pay fines of roughly $2,000 each. All seven were released on bail shortly after the verdict. Many are arguing that although these are historic events, it is too little too late. Rashna Dhingra is the India coordinator for the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal and has dedicated over a decade of work to the issue. And she joins us now this morning from Bhopal. Welcome, Rashna, to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thank you for having me.
It has been over 25 years since the gas leak. What is the current situation of the survivors of the Bhopal disaster?
Well, there are about 572,000 people that got exposed on that night, and more than 25,000 people who have died till now due to gas exposure-related illnesses, and about 100,000 people who suffer from chronic illnesses. In addition to that, this was just not one disaster that happened. Another disaster is of the disaster of water contamination, where more than 35,000 people live and they're forced to drink contaminated water on a daily basis. And we are seeing hundreds and hundreds of children being born with all sorts of birth defects that are happening in the second and the third generation. And the biggest travesty of all, that not a single person, not a single corporation, not a single agency behind jail or behind bars for committing such the worst industrial disaster.
And you mentioned the children being born since the disaster. What health problems have you analyzed and detected?
Basically, the toxic gases that were released on that night has had an impact on almost all systems of the body. So we see patients with a lot of anxiety, trauma, and panic attacks. A lot of people with lung problems, especially with chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. A lot of women with all sorts of hormonal problems in terms of having menopause as early as age 30 or having very late menarche cycle. Then all sorts of hormonal problems, thyroid and a thyroid is very high, and tuberculosis, the rate of tuberculosis, which is also a sign of immune system being repressed, is found to be 3 to 4 times higher. Then we see a load of skin problems and a lot of birth defects and congenital deformities in children who are being born to people who were exposed on that night and to those people who continue to live in an area where the water is contaminated.
So let's look a little at the legal aspects, given this massive human suffering and disaster and death. Why do you think it took over 25 years for the first verdict in this case to be announced?
Because our government lacked political will to prosecute the foreign accused, to prosecute who are responsible for the disaster, because our government holds foreign investment more dear than the lives of an environment of people of Bhopal, you know, and and whatever the verdict did come was absolutely a travesty of justice.
And how did the survivors themselves respond to this verdict?
obviously angered, shocked, and frustrated, but they have been used to such kind of behavior by the government and by the corporation. So they resolved to fight. Just the very next day the verdict came out, all survivor organizations came together and held a candlelight vigil just to say, just to tell the world that we are not going to give up, that we are going to do all the legal recourse that is in front of us with or without the government, because everything that people in Bhopal have got is because of their fight, and it is not because the government or the corporation have been willing to give them anything.
And what would be needed to have a fair verdict in this crime?
Fair verdict should be that they were tried in a case, in a charge that was much less serious. The charges were reduced back in 1996. That is the Indian accused of here. So they need to be tried in a culpable homicide case, basically, because that is what they committed here. They committed a murder. They knew that this factory had all sorts of safety differences. They were cutting back on their safety norms. They were cutting back on their refrigeration. So this was a well-planned out incident that happened. And more importantly, the foreign accused, which is Warren Anderson and Union Carbide Corporation, USA, they have not been extradited to India. One extradition request has gone for Warren Anderson and has been rejected by the U.S. state government, the U.S. state and Justice Department, because also the U.S. state and Justice Department does not want to extradite an ex-CEO of an American multinational corporation.
When I said that the fine in this case was for each of those convicted, as you say, of a minor charge, was a mere $2,000. But when you look at what British Petroleum has offered now with its oil spill in the United States of $20 billion, what does that tell you?
It speaks of double standards only. It speaks of Obama's double standards. Because how can Obama hold one corporation to one standard and American corporations operating in other countries to another standard? I mean, this was a chance for Obama to extradite Anderson and to tell Union Carbide and its new owner Dow Chemical to pay up. People are dying, people are drinking contaminated water, children are being born of birth defects because Dow Chemical, the new owner of Union Carbide, refuses to clean up the toxic site while they continue to do business in India. So this is an American corporation, and Obama cannot have one corporation do all of this for its own people and have a totally double standard for another corporation.
You mentioned that the Indian government itself also seems to follow the same pro-corporate agenda as does Obama in the United States.
Absolutely. We have obtained information under the Right to Information Act, the law in India, where basically what we have seen is letters written by Dow CEO Andrew Liveris, basically pressuring our top ministers, our top bureaucrats and top industrialists, saying, we want to invest $1 billion in your country on the condition that we are absolved of the Bhopal legal liability. And our government is swayed by this carrot of investment that's, you know, put in front of them. And the government came very close of doing another out-of-court settlement with the Dow Chemical, so they'd be absolved of their legal liability, and all the mess continues to be in Bhopal, where people are getting sick and drinking contaminated water on a daily basis.
And Dow Chemical is the successor to Union Carbide. There was a shift of ownership. Am I right in that?
That's right. In 2001, they took over Union Carbide, and as per the successor liability, they took over all the assets as well as the liabilities of the corporation. In 2002, they set aside money for Union Carbide's asbestos liability in Texas, which had damaged 12 workers. But when it comes to Bhopal, they have a completely double standard, and they continue to say that we never operated the plant there. Well, we know Dow Chemical never operated the plant. People of Bhopal are not stupid to not know that. What we are asking is they pay for the environmental remediation. This was a disaster that no one even knew of. That Union Carbide had started this disaster back in 1977 when they started dumping all the toxic waste in and around the factory in these ponds, and that is why the water and the soil is contaminated. So we are asking Dow, in very clear terms, clean up the toxic mess that Union Carbide has left behind, pay for health monitoring damages for children who are, or the people who are suffering health effects because of the contamination, and pay personal injury claims. It is simple as that, and Dow Chemical has got to do this.
And the precedent being set, if this case would remain where it presently is, will that affect other things, you think, in India as well?
Absolutely, because this precedent basically, this kind of judgment basically sets a precedent that corporations can come and set up their poisonous and toxic factories, pollute and kill, and then pay little, very little compensation, and then leave without any kind of criminal liability. This encourages corporations to produce more toxic chemicals and to have even a more cut down on all their safety standards, because they know they will get away with this.
And is there a nuclear industry, for example, where this might be a reality?
Exactly. This country, ironically, is debating a civil nuclear liability bill. And how ironic and how insulting also at the same time that they are thinking that the foreign corporations who will be supplying the technology for these nuclear reactors will not face any criminal liability in case of a nuclear disaster. And they're also trying to say that there will be a cap on the civil liability, and that cap will be just about the same amount of money, which is $450 million, as damages. That $450 million was a ridiculous amount to even pay back in 1989 for people who got injured. And to discuss the idea of capping the civil liability is absolutely wrong in any disaster, but our country is debating that because there's tremendous pressure from U.S. corporations and the U.S. government to do so.
So you are fighting really on two fronts with the government of India and the government of the United States. Do you have some plans that you could share with us about how you're moving forward since this court decision?
Well, legally, we are obviously fighting we will be appealing this, and we will be appealing the actual decision that reduced the charges back in 1996. So one good thing that has happened, that people in this country, and I'm hoping in the world, have also come together, and they have realized that how bad this whole thing has been, and they are offering to help. And so we have two fronts we are going to fight. One is the legal battle, and one is going to be a battle of direct actions, whether we have to go to Delhi and protest, and whether we have to, tell people all over the world that this is happening, and they have to raise their voice, otherwise they will be in the same line as we are. So we are basically asking people of this world to join us in our struggle, because struggle of Bhopal is no different from any other place who's fighting, toxic contamination or for environmental justice.
Well, thank you very much. Your strength and determination are inspiring, and we wish you continued energy in your ongoing battle for justice for the people of Bhopal.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Rashna Dhingra. She is the India coordinator for the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal. And if you wish to be in touch with that organization and follow their battle and offer your support, you can find their website at bhopal.net.